The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Our VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Maracanã, the barrage here at the D. You and I just went an hour talking about this game. You could do 10 hours on this.
You really could.
I don't know about 10, but 3 for sure.
You really could.
But we want to bring in some guests. Let me read some tweets here. At Beating the Book, always appreciate the feedback here. At VSiN.com, VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio. Jerry Bo knows, receiving the ball is like playing poker out of position. He's talking about the overtime. No way not seeing what the other team does first when you get the ball back, regardless, isn't the right move. Trying to justify this, his reasoning tells you all you need to know. I disagree. For all the reasons I stated. Sweet Three Dog, Gil, by taking the ball first, you're forcing yourself to make third, fourth down decisions blind while your opponent then has perfect information for their entire drive. Yes, absolutely. I discussed that. Here's Steve Fezzik chiming in. He goes, field goal, no score, no score. If either happens, San Francisco has a key advantage. Again, I'll put it this way. I get all the reasons people are saying for deferring, but getting the ball, the potential of getting the ball third slightly outweighs all of that. Stevie Fezzik agreeing. Roger Jones. Gil, it's definitely understandable that you didn't know if Romo was talking to Nance. He didn't yell Jim at the start. Oh, CJ. I'm glad he put this up. Rec League MVP 23. Did you hear the Brent Musburger reference at the beginning with Nance? Hall of Fame indeed. Yes, I'm so glad you brought this up. So yesterday, Kelly and I were doing a numbers game Sunday run-up to the game. And Kirk Chamberlain had tweeted in something about we've come a long way from VSiN's first Super Bowl to now, and I did all these Super Bowls. And I use it as an entree to talk about Brent, which is to say that I had just watched, prior to coming in yesterday, this documentary, I hope everybody saw this, called You Are Looking Live. CBS aired it between 1 and 2 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific. A whole one-hour documentary about the NFL today. And Brent was in it, and Jane Kennedy was in it. They are the only two remaining living members from that show, hosts of that show. Phyllis George, Irv Cross, and Jimmy the Greek Snyder have all passed away. But they did a phenomenal job in that hour talking about Jimmy the Greek and what he meant as what he meant to sports betting, that this was the first time that it had ever been broached in the creative ways that they did on network TV with him. His rise and fall was documented. Phyllis George, the first woman to be on a mainstream media football broadcast, and how it was difficult for her to be accepted, but she did it with such wonderful success. Irv Cross, the first African-American in that same role to be on a mainstream media show like that. And then Jane Kennedy, the first African-American woman. It was just a groundbreaking show in so many ways. And Brent, the maestro of it all, and Dan Patrick this week on his show with Brent present, said that he's going to write a letter to the Hall of Fame endorsing Brent to be inducted to the NFL Hall of Fame. And yesterday on our show, I did the same after having watched this documentary. Not that it took that documentary for me to do so, but I'm glad that Dan Patrick has the gravitas to write a letter and really push that forward. This man needs to be inducted in the Hall of Fame for those contributions from those days of the NFL today. And yesterday, Nance jumped on it as well. So I really hope this happens because Brent Musburger, who is 84 years old, who has meant obviously everything to the founding of VSiN, to everything he's done all the way back to the NFL today, which was his most groundbreaking years, he deserves to be in the NFL in the same way that John Facenda, the voice of NFL films, does. And so just wanted to put that out there again, and thank you for reminding me with that tweet. Jason Weingarten joins us, everybody, from under a cloud of smoke in Southern Cali. You can follow him on Twitter at Spreadopedia. Jason, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How did your Super Bowl go?
It was great, right till it wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
I think everything, you know, the consolation, I made a list of the good things. The Kyle Juszczyk props
yes.
were good.
Yes, us too.
The first half under was good. That worked out. The no Kelsey touchdown worked out. Unfortunately, I had a lot of the first half under also parlayed with the 49ers winning. But like I said, everything was good right up till it wasn't. And right up till it wasn't is a 4-point game with 5 minutes left in the third. Everything changed right about then. Overtime, never good for unders. You know, 49ers losing. I ended up with a position on the 49ers. I thought I was going to have more on the Chiefs plus two, but I ended up, as the week went on, with a larger position on the 49ers. So, yeah, that ended up costing me, but in the end, like, having the 49ers at, you know, over 2-1 and average odds on my position, I think just, I was pretty happy with that. And they didn't get over 2-1 till that last drive in overtime. So, I'd do it all again. It just didn't work out.
Yeah. You said off air, it's like, I've lost more on sporting events. You said about yourself. Yeah. For me, it was what could have been won rather than what was lost there. It was just the Niners had, and I'm curious if you feel the same. It just, there were so many opportunities the Niners had. And I'll just, like, real quick, because we did the whole guessing line style earlier. But if you go through these, you know, I'll just do a smattering. Niners using a timeout way too late at the end of the second half. Could have had a drive for a field goal. Maybe, maybe not. The pick by Jair Brown early in the third quarter, they couldn't capitalize on that. Shanahan getting away from the run early in the second half. Daryl Luter. I mean, the biggest play of the game almost gets lost, right? Which is the punt from the Chiefs. I mean, the Chiefs can't do anything. The punt that hits Daryl Luter in the back of the foot. Ray McLeod can't corral it. Jalen Watson recovers. And then Mahomes to MVS for the Chiefs, you know, first lead of the game. The Moody PAT that was blocked. The second and five where they go to Kittle late for no gain. And then third and four, Spags brings the house. And Purdy can't do anything with it. I mean, it's on and on and on. And I'm not even doing justice to a couple fumble luck plays for the Chiefs where they recover their own fumble. All those opportunities in the first half. It felt like there were so many opportunities in the third quarter. I'm like, if the Niners just score here and go up two touchdowns, this game is effectively over. And they just could never do it. Chiefs deserve all the credit in the world.
Yeah. I mean, when you like look at it, and I was up early this morning, so I had plenty of time to think about it, but the Chiefs, they score the one touchdown in regulation. Like you said, it's gifted to them off the muff punt. They get the ball at the 49ers, like 16-yard line. Mahomes, he's the Chiefs' leading rusher, basically.
If you look at
the box score, right?
Yeah.
Mecole Hardman, Justin Watson making the plays when needed. Mahomes getting snaps at his feet all night. You know, on the do-or-die drive, Marquez Valdes-Scantling ran backwards 10 yards. Set up a second and 13 instead of a second and short. They kept overcoming everything. So, you know, like if you were to tell me all these things and ask me who won the game and say, oh, well, Mahomes is the leading rusher and they only scored one touchdown, I'd be like, well, surely the 49ers won the game, right? So just that's what happens sometimes. It's a good game.
Yeah.
You know, Mahomes is Mahomes. He's best quarterback and he was the dude when it mattered. So
he was.
Can't really be upset about it.
Would you make a, like, we were tossing this around earlier, which is like, all right, just think about the Chiefs when they played the Raiders on Christmas, how bad they were. And, like, if you had told anybody watching that game, oh, don't worry, they're still winning the Super Bowl. Like, that, to me, is the takeaway lesson of this. Would you bet the Chiefs right now at 7-1 or whatever you can find it at and just put it in your account and say, yeah, this should be an auto bet every year with this guy?
I'm not going to tie up the money today, but you know, I get that sentiment. You're probably a year too late though. I mean, only thing harder than winning a Super Bowl is winning two Super Bowls in a row. And the only thing harder than winning two Super Bowls in a row is winning three Super Bowls in a row. So
yeah, I can think of something harder.
You're right. Probably have to give me more than 7-1 there and caught up in all the Super Bowl stuff. I mean, nobody probably cares at this point, but how absurd was some of the award voting last week? Like,
oh, let's talk about that. We didn't get it. We talked about it Friday on from Media Row. What was your biggest gripe?
Hamlin. Yeah. I mean, like, not only did he lose, but like, I just want to be in the room because, you know, like there's like media, like PR people for the league. Like they had to sell this as a, hey, look, he tied the voting. And we're giving the award to Flacco over the guy that died on the field. And remember, the guy that came back from cancer didn't even get any votes.
Oh, here we go with Mechie. Yeah.
I'm just like over this whole thing. I just don't care at this point. Like, it's not worth even.
Well,
like comeback player of the year is a joke. I think the Stephen A thing with Aaron Schatz was unfortunate and uncalled for. Like, he's more than qualified to vote any way he wants. You know, Schatz is justified. He doesn't have to explain it to Stephen A or anybody why he voted for Josh Allen. I thought that wasn't very cool.
We were with we were with Aaron Schatz, Kelly and I, and Matt Brown at dinner when that vote came down. And he, you know, he stands by, we're talking about MVP now. He was the only one that didn't vote Lamar Jackson first. And he stands by his vote on that. He had Lamar third. He had Josh Allen first, Dak second. But he recognized in the moment, even if you stand by your vote there, he's like, oh no, here comes the irrational backlash. And he was right. And we had him on Friday morning. He was the victim of you know, charges of racism, all these things that are just so out of bounds for a guy who is doing his thing based on his analytics and based on what he really feels. And it should also be pointed out, like, Lamar, that wasn't a unanimous MVP season. Like, we won't look back on that season and be like, oh my God,
right,
that was one of the all-time greatest seasons for any player. It wasn't like that. So much of that is all retroactive. I will say this, though, real quick, about the Hamlin thing. I don't know if you caught this, but Schatz told us Friday morning they are going to change that award, at least to define it more specifically. Because you're right. Right
now, it's an embarrassment.
Right now, it's just a catch-all best story thing, and it's too nebulous. So they're going to try to define it a little more.
Quick question for you. I know we're about to go out. So after the game, they brought the In-N-Out on set for Andy Reid. What were they going to do with the burgers if the Chiefs lost? I'm trying to figure this out. Was there like a PA offset who was really excited to eat those? Like, I got to know. Does anybody have any idea? What were they going to do with the burgers?
Jason, sounds like a project for you today. We got to get to the bottom of that. Thank you, yes, man. Great seeing you. Jason Weingarten, everybody, at Spreadopedia. We got to get to the bottom of that. We thought we had uncovered everything. Not that. Coming back, more Super Bowl 58.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With Omaha Steaks, you'll fall in love at first bite with their tender steaks, juicy burgers, air-chilled chicken, and more. You're going to love every bite. It's Omaha Steaks guarantee. And for a limited time, when you go to omahasteaks.com/VSiN, you'll get 4 free air-chilled boneless chicken breasts and 4 free rich, juicy boneless pork chops with your order. Minimum purchase may apply. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada, here at the Day. We get tweets at Beatty the Book. This is from, I want to pick up where we left off here. Todd Wishnev chimes in about the whole thing about, he says, you don't want to go to the hospital with tennis balls in your pocket or a helmet. Enough said. Little Achilles rupture humor. Poor Dre Greenlaw. That was such a horrible thing.
That Niners. It was one of the worst injuries I remember seeing in a Super Bowl. Just of, you know, when nothing happens.
Johnny Ringo, I'm sorry, but Tom Brady's first Super Bowl win, he had way less offensive options than Mahomes did for this one. Oh, I wasn't saying he was above Brady.
Yeah.
Never said that.
I'm not going to argue that.
No. Brady's number one. He has 7. You can't get past that.
But I got Mahomes too. He's the how did I hear someone put this last night? He's the goat in waiting. All right. Sorry. Goat, but he's waiting. The goat in waiting for me.
This is a
can't take rings away from Brady. I can't take rings away from the guy.
This is Terry Ray reacting to a Kent Swanson tweet where he says the Chiefs have cycled through 2 versions of the Niners, rookie contracts of Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and Jalen Hurts, and have 3 rings to show for it. Mahomes not only has built his own legacy, but has denied the opportunity for other legacies to grow wild. Well, besides the Burrow part, I would agree with that. Terry Ray, and this KC defense is young, all back next season. Spags is first ever OC or DC to win 4 Super Bowls. Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. Joey Sinante checking in. He's excited to hear the podcast I did with Will. Jason H11, thanks for doing a show yesterday between ANG and the crazy golf ending. The lead up to the game was great. If only I had that sushi place.
Yeah, I didn't want to watch that. I threw a few bucks on my boy, the Hoff, on Saturday live. Didn't get home.
Bainbridge DeWeese, I had over 90.5 seconds for the national anthem and by my stopwatch, and I would have lost if not for the second the Brave, but my faraway place still paid me on the over. This is from...
Okay, so that's good to know.
That is good to know. Charles in Connecticut, I know the new OT rules, and my first reaction was horrible Shanahan choice. Hadn't considered the third possession at all till I heard in post-game analysis. Got to be open-minded to new info. Still think defer is the right choice, but it's not black and white. Now, that's a reasonable thing to say right there.
Yeah, because I think the way that you've been putting it, I'm on the other side. I'm very okay, but I think more times than not, I would kick the ball.
Like I said, I am not sitting here on a perch saying what he did was 100% right. What I'm saying to you is if you think he was 100% wrong, you're wrong. Yeah, like, it's not. There is an argument to absolutely be made that having the ball third is the single most important thing.
I think the biggest takeaway, though, is the rule is awesome. Like, that is a great improvement to overtime in the playoff to me, like, without a doubt.
#Schwartz. Gil, I love the show. Thank you for all the great insight during the year and all the tennis handicapping as well. Any advice on the tennis handicapping? I would say, once again, the WTA and ATP sites are way more robust than you think they would be. Big Rick 73, yes, getting the ball third would be important, but what if KZ went for two at San Francisco, scored a touchdown? Then there's no getting the ball third. I understand your point, but I think it's totally the wrong move to take the ball first. I talked about that. It's exactly what should happen. The first team, if they score a touchdown, should kick the extra point. That is the correct, optimal thing to do. That way you force the other team to try to have to go for two. All of these things are true. Doesn't make your argument to me. Because I agree with all those things, but that's part of the calculus of why you receive. Let's see. Oh, Derby Data, will end with this one. Please find a way to get Merrill Hodge on the show before the season and Super Bowl. To me, his analysis is among the most consistently accurate and informative of anyone on TV. I have to bring that up again. Kelly and I were fortunate enough to do Media Row on Thursday and Friday over at Mandalay Bay. And we had a lot of great guests. Like, Friday was just strewn with great guests. But what will stand out for me, obviously, Ross Tucker was with us Thursday, too. Shots on Friday, talking about the backlash he was getting after Lamar. He was the only vote that didn't make Lamar unanimous for MVP. Was a huge highlight. And Merrill Hodge on Thursday, dude. Like, we are going to absolutely effort to have him on before the draft. Because that whole conversation ended up being me saying, like, why aren't you a GM? Like, seriously, forget funny. Why aren't you back being an analyst? Why aren't you in a front office?
Yeah, I believe that's how your conversation. I think the first question was, why aren't you on TV? Like, why aren't you an analyst? Then why aren't you a GM?
Well, because for those who missed it and don't know, not only
on our YouTube page.
Not only did he famously tell Skip Bayless, you're wrong about Johnny Manziel, he's going to be a bust, and here are the reasons. He also said Khalil Mack over Jadeveon Clowney in that same draft. And more recently, and I didn't know this till the night before the Hodge interview when I was doing some research on it, he apparently had said, and I brought this up talking to him, that C.J. Stroud was the only quarterback, the only one that should be drafted in the first round this past year. And he gave all his reasons on the show the other day as to why. So that's when I launched into, bro, I don't think I called him bro, but I was like, why are you not an analyst anymore? And forget that. Why aren't you in a front office? Why aren't you GM? I'd hire you in a second. And he kind of indicated that it wasn't in his heart. My words, not his. But then I said, look, would you take a meeting? He's like, yes, I would take a meeting. Dude, we got to have him on before the draft. That guy is never, by the way, he had the Chiefs. Remember what I said? I had the Niners. I'm like, oh no, Hodge had the Chiefs. He was the only guy. He was the only guy that gave me pause.
All these days are melting together now, but I forget what day you said that you're like, I don't really know why, but of all the people that have been on the other side of me, it's Merrill Hodge that has concerned me the most.
He's never wrong. You wanted to talk about Gatorade Gate?
Oh, the Gatorade Gate, man. You didn't catch this? They didn't show the classic Gatorade bath.
Correct, and we were wondering, was there Gatorade?
Yeah, you know me, I'm freaking out about it. Where's my blue Gatorade? You know, where's it at? I don't think it ever got shown on TV. Finally, the NFL put a tweet out, but this is after.
They did show it finally well after
they
the
did?
Game.
Okay,
yes,
okay.
They did?
So, I mean, I'm still wondering. Yes, it was purple. It was purple again.
It was pristine.
It was pristinely purple.
There was no controversy on the color.
You know I would have tried to be like, blue kind of melted down. No, it was clearly purple.
It was totally purple.
But I just don't understand what is the technology of Andy Reid's windbreaker here?
It's the controversy.
To keep him dry. Like, everything we saw after this moment, Andy Reid looked like he was completely dry. So nothing had ever touched him.
So are you suggesting, Kelly Bidlin, that this was somehow CGI'd in after the fact, and that if Andy Reid is completely dry, this could not have possibly happened? Is that what you're suggesting?
No. But I've got a new conspiracy theory for you.
Okay.
Someone said, hey, we forgot to do the Gatorade. Guys, here's a Gatorade thing. Run out there and do it real quick so we can get it on camera. And we're just, maybe that guy who said that made the decision. He knew exactly what color was in that bucket.
Dun, 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 dun. This has been a Kelly Bidlin Gatorade conspiracy. Nah,
the purple Gatorade's great. We saw the steam. We tracked that yesterday. Watched our show pregame, we talked about how DraftKings had pulled this for like 48 hours. And when they posted it back up, it was -130.
We had all the novelty stuff by game time. We had the purple Gatorade. Yep. We had over on Reba, and we had all the Usher stuff, even though there's the My Way controversy.
Oh, another one we didn't discuss, I'm assuming it got home, was the Planes.
The Planes got home, right?
That was easy.
Planes got home. That was
it.
Six.
Oh, yeah, you would have been driving. I didn't see it.
I didn't see it, but I'm it had to be six. We knew it was six from people who had connections to the Pentagon. Yeah.
That's right.
And I'm not just talking about Jason.
We saw that video.
That's right. Yeah, we saw the video. These are all the Mahomes props, by the way. We should show this.
Yeah, we just run through all the player props quick.
Just an over fest for Patrick Mahomes. That over 26 and a half rushing yards that I had was like, oh, this is never going to get there. And then it was like, oh, my God, he got there so easily. That fourth and inches where Bosa just crashed into the line and Mahomes took it for an easy peasy six.
And then the chess match all night long between Bosa and Mahomes on the edge was incredible to watch.
The fact that they went with like read options and they were just reading Bosa.
This is where I know we like to hate on these guys a lot. I did think Romo Nance did a good job of pointing that out in the first half of how Bosa was playing him on the outside and forcing him to not really be able to roll out to the outside.
Let me repeat that about Nance and Romo. I had no – like I thought they were, in terms of like the mechanics of the game, I thought they were excellent. I just felt like – and I don't know. No one has tweeted in this, so maybe it's just me.
No, I agree.
Maybe it was just
you.
Me. I just felt like they weren't up – energy-wise. One person did tweet in that he agreed. But I was just sort of like, did I know that it just hit? Like, that's that play where the Chiefs on that punt get the ball back on the muff. Like, you're right. They didn't get it that it had bounced off because they were going to blame Ray McCloud at first. And then they realized on the replay. But then when Mahomes scores, like, I didn't feel like the gravitas of that moment where the Chiefs had just been gifted a go-ahead touchdown landed on them in the way that it should have, and it bothered me at the moment.
I mean, I think my answer to that would be, those questions would be, I think Jim Nance probably thinks like everybody else out there that the performance level has dropped off with his partner, and that is,
maybe.
That's tough to deal with. Like, it's tough.
Maybe. Maybe. Could be. Tony Romo so great out of the gates. And then as the...
Loved him.
As the game went further in the rear view.
Loved losing money betting on him as a player.
Mike Somich from The Handle joins us. He had the Chiefs. He's got thoughts. That's next. Numbers Game. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you're looking for a betting edge on college basketball, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber with an introductory offer of only $9.99. Subscribe today. Get our daily best bets emails, 24/7 video access, the upcoming College Hoops betting guide, bracket breakdowns, plus full access to VSiN.com with our exclusive betting split breakdowns on every game. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to sign up for only $9.99. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada. We are thrilled to welcome in the co-hosts of The Handle. He does it with Matt Brown. Weekends here at VSiN. It's our buddy. It's our new buddy. Our recent buddy, Mike Somich, joining us. How you doing, Mike?
Doing good. Doing good. Still recovering from last night. Definitely a long day on air at 7:30 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night at some point yesterday. So long day, but a phenomenal Super Bowl.
So before we get into how you did with your props, and I was thinking about you all during that game because you were our last guest yesterday on our special Super Bowl edition of A Numbers Game, and I know you were all in on the under, and so we'll talk about that momentarily. But as is going to be the case with everybody today, the first thing we started talking about off air was the decision by Mike Shanahan to receive the football in overtime, and I love talking to you about it because, and this is the point again, it's like we don't do gray area well in this business. And you and I can have a reasonable debate. Give me your position on it.
I thought it was an interesting position. Obviously, the first overtime game we've seen since the new rules in the playoffs, so that throws a little bit of a curveball in there. I read on X, and not positive this is 100% correct, but it was about a 1.5% advantage if you decide to kick and you have the ball second in that position.
Okay.
So not a massive difference from an edge perspective, especially over a long term. So for me, it's more about feel in that moment. Like, if you go back to that Chiefs-Bills game, I always want the ball first, because both of those offenses were just going up and down the field. You expect to score a touchdown in your first possession. You expect they score a touchdown in their second possession. And then you have the ball with a field goal to win.
So 1.5% advantage to defer to receive?
To defer.
Okay.
So just a slight advantage to defer. And it makes sense. I mean, if you think about it in a poker situation, you always want the button. You want last decision. And even in that case where San Francisco goes down and kick a field goal, Kansas City knows there's 0% chance they're punting. So they're playing with four downs until they get into field goal range or eventually score a touchdown, which is a much more positive expected value situation for that team. And that's the main argument from the you should always defer camp, right? Is that you know exactly what you need and you know exactly how to play
it. Which is a perfectly reasonable argument.
Correct, yes.
Right.
And in this situation, I mean, I felt like this was really a coin flip decision. And it was one of those where, yeah, okay, you could take the football. If you're San Francisco, try and go down and get a touchdown. Your defense was just on the field. They looked gassed. You really want them to go out against Mahomes again right away. And it didn't feel like a situation where you're guaranteeing both sides are going to be able to get a touchdown on that first drive, just from the way that game had played out.
My objection is to people who say he was absolutely wrong for doing what he's doing. And I'll just say it again. I go, some things are not objective. Some things are not. And to me, it is not. You are 100% wrong. Again, going back to using the most recent example, the Lions. Dan Campbell going for it on fourth twice. I'd have kicked the field goal. Doesn't mean I'm right. Doesn't mean he's wrong. When he ran the ball with a minute left, with three timeouts left, and had to and didn't make the proper risk reward assessment, and ended up having to expend that timeout, he effectively ended the game for his team. That's objectively wrong.
That's correct. And here, where Shanahan was objectively wrong, you go in and you read articles this morning about preparation for overtime in this game.
That I agree with 100%. Like, the fact that he didn't prepare his team for that is another matter. Even though he knew what he wanted to do, you can't get past the fact. I mean, both things are true, right? Like, it's weird that he didn't tell his team, but he still knew what his strategy was.
He did, but to have, like, Armstead and Juszczyk come out and say, I don't know the overtime rules until I saw them on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Me and Fezzik were talking about in December in a casual conversation. Yeah. We're not coaches. We're debating what would be the proper strategy. And by the way, again, some of the feedback, because if you score, then they'll go for two. Yes, they will, to prevent the third possession, but that's part of the calculus too. First team scores touchdown, optimal is kick extra point. Second team matching that ought to go for two, but that's part of the first team's calculus, and that will force you to go for two.
Exactly. And and then you have a 50-50 coin flip essentially
that's
to win
right.
the football game, and that would have broken the city.
Oh man.
Had you had a touchdown for San Francisco, Kansas City comes and scores.
Man.
And it's landing one way or the other.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have just absolutely, and it would have gone over. That would have been a very sad post-game show. last night had that game gone over.
We didn't bring this up. Should first possession of overtime, should San Francisco have kicked the field goal, or should they have gone for it?
It really depends on how much you trust that defense. And Kansas City effectively moved the football more in the later part of that game than
absolutely.
They did the earlier part of the game. I think that's another coin flip decision. I mean, yes, you're sitting there and you're like, well, if we miss it, Kansas City basically wins the football game. You expect them to be able to go kick a field goal, but you really want to put pressure on that Kansas City offensive team. I'm not surprised Shanahan kicked it.
I'm not either.
He's been a take the points guy all year.
I was surprised he went for the fourth and three in regulation.
I was as well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it should never have come down to that. The Niners had so many chances to put the game away, I felt like. Now, here's why I was thinking about you. Because you put in your words. How many positions on the under did you have?
So I had four full positions, and that ended up being my biggest decision by far. 4x any other decision for me was under 47.5. But then I had four alt unders. So I had under 45, under 42.5, under 40.5, and under 38. And so
brutal.
I'm sitting there, and you know, it totaled up to a unit of all those alt unders.
Yeah.
But it would have been my single largest football win had those alt unders cashed.
Yeah.
Because I did well in everything else. And just to watch how that game played out. And when you had that muff punt when it was 10-6, that was the moment where I'm like, all right, now my alt unders are in play. And well, then as the way thing plays out, I'm like, is the under in play now? Like, could this game actually go over?
It's the perfect example of handicapping it right, but that's why they call it gambling, right? Doesn't it always work out.
It is. And my biggest prop was second quarter, highest scoring quarter. They put up 13 points, but the Chiefs have the ball inside the 10 twice and score 3 points on those two possessions. And that ends up losing by 2 points. Because the fourth quarter gets to 15 versus the 13 in the second quarter. Now, the nice part about that is able to hedge off some of it because you're sitting on plus 165 and the in-game total was sitting at 31.5 when you had 23 points. And so you were able to take some of that back and create a middle, which was nice. So at least I was able to get off some of it. But looking back, I mean, I that second quarter cap was right there to be had as well. I mean, that should have been a 17 or 24-point quarter, and you end up with 13, and it just misses.
Let me go through some stuff we talked about today. I'm curious if you agree or disagree. One, if that is not a Super Bowl with all the stakes inherent in a Super Bowl, legacies being determined, Lombardi Trophy, obviously, even before the legacy, that itself of that one game, and then the despair of the loser. If not for those stakes and all of our bets, because we have a plethora of prop bets with every Super Bowl, if this were the Bucks and the Saints, sorry to pick on those two teams. I don't know why that keeps coming up in my head. If it was the Bucks and the Saints in a early window on Sunday in week 5, do we even linger on this game at all the way it played out?
No, we don't. I mean, if this was an NFC title game, AFC title game, we don't even linger that much.
I agree.
I mean, you think back to the Bengals win over Kansas City, which was an epic comeback for the Bengals. Tides completely flipped. That was an overtime game. We barely talk about that anymore. Whereas, because this is a Super Bowl and the way it played out and the fact that, look, the fourth quarter and the overtime were phenomenal. The first three quarters were just ugly, ugly,
ugly
football.
Ugly.
But because the ending was so great, because it was a Super Bowl, because it is someone who I think has to move up into the second best quarterback ever.
That's
now,
where I put him.
And knocking, he's on Brady's corner at this point. Yeah. He's got the window for the Chiefs is wide open for the next 4 to 5 years. This should be the worst Chiefs team we're going to see in the next 4 to 5 years, considering how young and how good that defense is. And the fact that they're going to have more cap room moving forward versus what they had with the hit that Mahomes has taken the last 2 years.
You taking him at 7-1 right now?
I bet him last night.
You did? Yeah. I knew I'd get a taker.
There you go.
Here's the thing, and this is the thought process behind it. They're not going to have any major losses on the defense, on the offensive line. Kelce, I don't think, is going to retire. You're probably going to get 90%, 85% of Kelce next year, which you got this year. If they go out and they get T. Higgins, if they go out and they get Calvin Ridley, what's their number? 5, 4.5?
And I also put it by, again, going back to that Christmas game where they get stomped by the Raiders and they couldn't have looked worse. And just the notion that we have to keep that in mind of, because they have Michael Jordan on their team, it doesn't matter how bad they look at any moment in any season. The fact that someone could have told you right in that moment, hey, don't worry about this, guys. I know they're getting stomped. They're still going to win the Super Bowl. So we have to think about that every year now moving forward, even if we haven't already.
Let's just put last night in perspective. Travis Kelce had one catch for 1 yard in the first half.
That's right.
Rashee Rice, their number one wide receiver, was a no-show for the game. That one stunk. I had some Rashee Rice money. And the two touchdown catches are caught by Mecole Hardman and Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Yeah.
And that is your Super Bowl champion.
Yeah.
I mean, the weapons are non-existent, and they were still able to do this. It just a phenomenal team effort. And really, it just shows you how good Mahomes is. When he is able to actually get time and able to dissect the defense, he's just the best player in the league right now. And it's not close.
No. Drew Dinsick said it at a time during this season on this show. You remember this, Kelly? He came on. We were talking about MVP. It was probably like week 6 or 7.
Yeah.
They weren't looking good. He said, it was Will who said this also. He said, there's a bigger gap between Mahomes and the second best player in the league than he ever remembers. And I remember thinking, really? I mean, now it seems so obvious.
Yeah, Drew was talking about him being MVP when we were all like, they're like 500. Yeah. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Let's talk about the Niners side of this with Mike. Other props that he got right and wrong. That's on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game. Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5 and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada here at the D. Mike Somich, kind enough to join us for another segment. He, the co-host of The Handle here at VSiN. We were talking off air about a few things. I think one of the points you just made, I'll take the last one first. Talanoa Ufanga, which is a great call by you. Obviously, the Greenlaw freak injury happens. I also mentioned, like, the Knights kind of in the Niners' DNA, right? Like, Debo was out, then he was back in. Kittle was out, then he was back in. When McCaffrey's leg got wrenched under him, I was like, oh, no. Purdy got horse collars, his knee buckled a little. I'm like, geez, this team. It always seems like there's something they're dealing with, obviously the Greenlaw thing. But Ufanga coming back next year. I mean, it's another reason why there's the short shot, I guess. But how do you come back from that?
You always hear about the Super Bowl hangover, specifically for the loser. And this is going to be one of the interesting test cases in that. Are they going to be able to rebound and come back? I think the one positive you take away from it, I thought Purdy played well last night. And he looked like he was a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, which is a huge plus for them. But I was against the Niners all year from a Super Bowl perspective because of the injuries. I had concerns that they wouldn't be able to get their biggest horses to that game completely healthy. The loss of Ufanga, I don't think people made enough of, especially going into this.
Oh,
if you look at
so
their DVOA on the difference of specifically outside runs and what he was able to do to be able to stop those outside runs from the safety perspective was massive for this 49ers team. They get him back. But when you compound the loss of Greenlaw with the loss of Ufanga, all of a sudden your coverage is very different, specifically on Kelsey. We saw him go 1-for-1 before the injury and absolutely go off after the injury to Greenlaw, and that flipped this game on its head. But this was the best chance you had for this Niners team in a long time. And the injuries are going to bite them at some point next year. And it's interesting we finally saw that catch up with them here in the Super Bowl, where you do have Kittle in and out and you do have Debo in and out, and you lose someone like Greenlaw, which was a freak accident. And he's not someone who's traditionally been injured. But the other two guys are guys who've struggled with injuries their entire career.
You know what I think about, Kelly? We did power rankings, as everybody does. But Kelly and I did them religiously one day every week. I think Tuesdays we did them. And I'm just thinking about, like, as a macro thing, I had San Francisco 1 for most of the year. I had Baltimore 2 for most of the year. And I remember I had Kansas City at 3, and I sort of, like, I held them there. And I was like, they lose to Denver 24-9 at Denver on October 29th. Two games later after a bye, they lose to Philly 21-17. 2 weeks after that, they lose at Green Bay. They lost at home to Buffalo the next week. 2 weeks after that, that horrible game against the Raiders on Christmas. And throughout all that, I remember I was like, put them from 3-4, put them from 4-5, 5-6, right? Like, it was this slow bleed that I just refused to drop them off. And that's the Mahomes factor, right? Like, even I had to, like, you had to let them go at some point down that thing. But it's the power of Mahomes that you can't purge them entirely, right? Even after, like, all those games I just mentioned, right? What's that? They had 5 losses in a span of 8 games right there in the middle of the season, culminating with that Raiders debacle.
But if you look back, there were really only 3 games that they lost, right? The Denver game, the Bills or the Packers game, and the Raiders game. Those were the 3 outright just losses. But if you go back and you say, okay, what about that Lions game? Well, you change one drop or a couple drop passes and a drop pick 6, and all of a sudden that game is different. If you go back to the Eagles game and MVS catches it, that game's different. If you go to the Buffalo game and Tony's off sides, that game's yes. different. And if you say they win all 3 of those, which are essentially coin flips, those are high variance games because of how they played out. This team is 14-3. They're the one seed in the AFC, and Mahomes is your MVP this year.
The MVS the MVS drop and the Kadarius Toney offsides absolutely needs to be emphasized. And is still, with all of that, they ended up as the 3 seed. It's not like they were the 6 or 7, right? They ended up as a 3 seed in all of this.
Would you like to know where we had the Chiefs power ranked on January 2nd?
Yes, probably what, 7?
Gil had them number 8 in the NFL. Uh-huh. I had them number 9 in the NFL. The Kansas City Chiefs, Super Bowl champions.
Where? What date was that? Week 17?
January 2nd.
So that's after week 17 or 18? After 18, I think. Let me check.
That's 17, I think. Right?
17 one more after week 17. Yeah. That's right. Because they had beaten a diminished Cincinnati team right after the Las Vegas loss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I
had, love power
but
rankings.
That was the power rankings bleed. Like, right, it was from 3 to 4 to 5 to 6.
Right,
like,
exactly, I just right. It was what you were talking about.
Yeah, I couldn't, like, you couldn't keep them up, but you couldn't purge them either.
I never had them outside my top five. And one of the reasons
you didn't, and that is your best strength of the whole year.
One of the reasons is, and I think this is crazy to me, they went 12-6 against the spread in the regular season. The Kansas City Chiefs were one of the most public teams. Mahomes, who gets bet, 12-6 against the spread. So you knew the market was off on them. And it's because people dropped them in a lot of these games. And it was, I don't trust these wide receivers. But look, they're consistently getting the opportunity to make the play. And then it's, can they make it, or are they not going to be able to? Mahomes was getting the ball to the guys every single game in the right positions at the right times, and they were covering.
Was there any doubt yesterday? I mean, the whole time the Niners are blowing opportunities to go up 2 touchdowns, all we kept saying on text was, oh, you are leaving the door open for the greatest player in the world. And you just kind of felt it. And then those final drives. And again, Brock Purdy shoulders none of this. Like, he was, when he left the field, the last 2 times he left the field, the Niners were ahead. And they just, there was in my, and I'm sure it was shared by tens of millions of people across this country and worldwide, there wasn't a thought in my head. The only time, the only moment where I allowed myself to think, oh, maybe the Niners can do this, is that MVS play where he was 4 or 5 yards in front and they swung him back behind the line of scrimmage, and it was 2nd and 14. And I was like, okay, maybe this. But that was the only moment, and 2 plays later, it was like 13 yards to Rice on 3rd and 7.
That was an all-time prop moment, because MVS over receiving yards was one of the most bet props. And he gets that 16-yarder to score the touchdown, so he goes over his longest reception for the game of 13.5. And if he catches that and just goes down, gains 6, he goes over every single total. But because he loses 4 yards, he goes back. And so everyone who's like, we got to overtime, we're going to get it in overtime, we got the catch. Oh, wait a second. He just ran backwards 10 yards. To me, the only moment I didn't think the Chiefs were going to win was the interception right out of half. That was the moment where I lost a little bit of faith, I'll be honest.
No. I'm just talking about late stages in overtime. There were tons of moments during the heart of the game where I was like, if the Niners could just do X, this game is over. But let's even go back to the first half. Mike, there was a moment in the first half. Remember, the Chiefs only scored 3 with 20 seconds left. There was a moment late in the first half where it crept into my mind, are we going to see the first shutout in Super Bowl history? Because the Niners defense, we forget, like, now it seems outlandish. The Niners defense was destroying them, right? It was complete domination, and then not so much. But you're right. The Jair Brown pick to begin the third quarter.
Yeah.
Just get me 3 minimum.
Yeah.
7, well, this game might be over.
Well, and if you look at the way that played out as well, to get the ball at the 40-yard line, you don't score a point. You then pin them at the 1.
Oh.
Don't allow a first down.
That's
right. And the Townsend, like, sneaky MVP of this game was Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
On the hold, on the 57-yarder, where it's up in his head, he gets that down. And then he flipped the field 3 times with punts.
Conley was sneaky MVP-ish, too.
Yes.
But you're right. But that was the sequence where it was 6 plays at the beginning of the second half, where it was pass, pass, pass. Pass, and then I get on the fifth and sixth play, you had to pass. But that was just enough of an abandonment of the run that set them back, right? Those were the moments they had to capitalize on. Now it's in the ether. And if you're, forget it, those of us who had the Niners financially, if you're a Niners fan, if you're in that front office, you just don't know if you'll ever get back there. You don't. And you are stacked. This is how you win Super Bowls. Rookie quarterback overperforming on a rookie contract, stacked around him. And you still couldn't beat this dude.
It's going to be tough. I mean, you look at this, and the NFC is going to get better. I mean, Detroit's going to come back. They're going to improve their defense. They need to make moves in the secondary. If they do, they're going to be a very good football team. Their offense is going to be significantly better next year, because you have Gibbs in his second year. You have LaPorta in his second year. You've got Ben Johnson that's going to be back there. The Eagles are going to be better. The Cowboys should be better. They get both of their cornerbacks back. Like, this is an NFC that is going to get better next year than it was this year, especially the playoff versions of those teams. Now, you're going to have some injuries next year. You're going to go through the ups and downs of the NFL season, but this was the Niners' opportunity, especially with home field and how this played out for them. I can't even imagine as a Niners fan, especially after the first two games where you ripped victory out of the jaws of defeat to be able to beat Green Bay and Detroit.
We'll start the show we'll end the show the way I started it. The irony of all ironies, right? And I'll give Todd Wishnev credit for this too. The Niners won two playoff games. They had no business winning, and they lost a Super Bowl they probably shouldn't have had any business losing. And that's the irony of it all. And it's Mahomes. Now, I do want to point out Burrow will be back too, and that might be the Chiefs' kryptonite, right? He's the one guy, so that exists as well. Mike, pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
Of course. Happy to do this to end the football season with you boys.
Well, I appreciate it very much. That is the end of football season. I'm going on vacation. Matt Brown will be in this chair tomorrow.
Yep, and he's in the rest of the week. Yep.
Mateo Brown for Mike Somich, for Kelly Bidlin. Thanks for listening. Best Bets is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.